Joining us tonight is Lily Hay Newman, a writer for Wired, but more importantly, someone who is focusing on something that is near and not so dear to everyone in Washington State who's been dealing with our unemployment insurance problems. So one problem was just the lockup on the websites. The other problem that has been later emerging is vast fraud, some of it domestic, but it turns out that some of this fraud is international. Lily did a fantastic story for Wired. We have her on right now. Lily, thank you for joining us.
Hey, thanks for having me.
So, Lily, I don't even know where to begin on this one, but I guess we begin in Nigeria. What is this? So, purportedly, at least according to your story, there is an international cybercrime ring that has been hitting places in the United States, specifically targeting unemployment insurance. Can you explain a little bit about what's going on here?
Yeah, so the Secret Service had issued an alert about this situation around the U.S. last week and had said in that alert that Nigerian actors seem to be driving the unemployment fraud that everyone is seeing around the country. And as you said, specifically focused in Washington State, or particularly focused there. And so this was sort of not necessarily that surprising to the threat intelligence and cybersecurity group researchers and, you know, groups out there, because Nigerian scammers are really known for capitalizing on these types of situations and inserting themselves to do this type of fraud. And so one group specifically that researchers shed some light on in my piece is this group that the researchers called Scattered Canary. But the important thing is that they're a known entity. They do types of email fraud, phishing fraud, small, medium business fraud, things like that. And now they're really expanding their unemployment fraud repertoire.
Lily, you mentioned specifically in your article states like Washington and Massachusetts. Why Washington? Is there something about our systems that's easier to target? Do you have any insight there?
Yeah, I'm really actually not sure about the answer to that question yet. I just know that, you know, the Secret Service had specifically called Washington out as a sort of magnet for this last week, and then the researchers I spoke to, their findings were right in step with that. So it seems, you know, to be corroborated in a bunch of different ways, but I'm not sure exactly why they're having the easiest time or wanting to focus on Washington.
What sort of money are we talking about in Washington State, and what sort of money are we talking about nationally that could have been defrauded from the unemployment insurance system?
So the Secret Service has warned that if this problem isn't brought under control, it could result in hundreds of millions of dollars in losses across the U.S., which obviously, as we're in the midst of, you know, a devastating pandemic, and not to mention a critical global recession and recession in the U.S., or economic downturn in the U.S., something on the scale of hundreds of millions of dollars, there's really not time for that. You know, there really isn't room to deal with something like that. So I think that's why the Secret Service and researchers are trying to really get on this. And I think so far, the researchers I spoke to said that this actor is probably racking up in the hundreds of thousands is what they can see currently and confirm, but they were extrapolating based on the patterns they were seeing that probably the amount has already been in the millions. And yeah, since the bulk of that has been in, you know, coming from Washington State, that kind of gives you a sense of scale. But it's really because the unemployment payments are sort of weekly and, you know, happen over time, this is really a moving target that gets larger the longer this goes on.
How are they doing this?
The basic idea is you use data that has already been stolen in other data breaches or in certain sort of more targeted types of data theft to file for unemployment on behalf of others, basically. So you just need things like name, birthday, address, and crucially, social security number, you know, but all of these things that we use to authenticate ourselves regularly, and we don't even think about it. It's just like, well, this is my address, so I put it in. But if somebody else has that same information about you, they can file on your behalf. People might be more familiar with this from tax fraud, which is kind of a recurring problem every year, where someone might file your return on your behalf so that they get your refund check. And again, it's the same type of thing where they're using your personal details, your information to make it happen, whether you've lost your job or not in this case.
Is this because somebody, let's say, fell for a phishing scam and they gave over their personal information? Or is this when you hear about data breaches in companies, let's say you sign up for like an Equifax or something and they have your information and there is a mass theft there? Is that how they're getting people's info?
Yeah, it's a good question. It's a little bit nuanced, but basically it can come from those large data breaches. But a lot of times, if you think back to, you know, what's actually happened and what's known about those incidents, like you mentioned, the Equifax breach, a lot of times it later comes to light that those breaches weren't carried out by criminals or scammers, but were carried out by nation-state actors for espionage. So in a lot of cases, though all of our Social Security numbers, or not all of them, but you know, many of us have had our Social Security numbers stolen in those kinds of breaches, things like that, a lot of times that data isn't actually circulating in the criminal marketplace, so that actually might not be where this is coming from. But it's definitely a contributor to a degree. And then the other component is slightly more targeted data theft. So things like what's called W-2 fraud, where scammers will target a particular company, could be maybe a medium-sized business or a small business, kind of infiltrate through email fraud, as you were mentioning, and then grab all of the W-2 tax form data or all the payroll data from that company. So it's not like a major breach that's on every news network, but it's a significant number of people, maybe hundreds of people or something like that, that they now have full granular details on and can kind of go from there. But I would say it's probably not cobbled together from individual phishing attacks one at a time, because that would take a long time for scammers to amass what they need.
Tell us a little bit about, which is the only movie-grade line I've run across so far, Scattered Canary. This group. What do we know about this particular group? How long have they been in business? Is this international? Is it primarily Nigerian? What's that story?
Right. So Scattered Canary is a group that I think a few research firms have been following, but particularly this firm Agari that I spoke to for my story. They've been following them really closely for about 18 months, I believe. But the group dates back, I think, more than 10 years now, or maybe about 10 years. It started as kind of like a one-man job, or, you know, just a very small experimental thing. And now is, you know, really grown into a sort of standardized or institutionalized business almost, you know, a lot of members, a lot of participants. So it can be a little hard to pin down, you know, who exactly is doing what or something like that within the organization. But it's sort of teams, different people being assigned to different types of fraud, but, you know, very sort of professionalized type of environment. And another thing Agari has noticed is that this group really kind of collects tools in their toolbox to be able to sort of piggyback off of different types of fraud. And, you know, you get data for one type of thing, and then you can use that data to do another type of scam and just sort of build out this web.
When we're talking about this sort of vulnerability in a system, I know this may sound a little bit odd, and maybe it's both things, but are we generally talking about an institutional breach or a personal breach? In other words, is this generally a problem with the system set up, say, by the state or say by the company, that it is not secure enough? Or is it that we are just not secure enough with our own information? Or is it a little bit of both?
I definitely would not say that it's individual people's fault or that, you know, we as individuals are not being careful enough with our data. I think people earnestly do the best they can and just do what they can with their, you know, knowledge and experience. And so we need to always be creating systems that cut down on abuse on behalf of the users or foresee abuse cases in advance and block them so that, you know, it's not on the user to, like, hold up the weight of this whole responsibility because it's just not really feasible. In this particular case, though, you know, it's just about figuring out what authentication method is going to be practical and secure for the situation. And in the United States, we really lean on the Social Security number, while meanwhile, the Social Security agency says, well, we don't, this is not an authenticator. You should not use it for that purpose. So right away, we have this sort of massive problem that just comes up again and again. So it's not the state of Washington's fault. But it's not individuals' fault, but it's, you know, what are we doing collectively? That's been a huge open question for years.
We're talking with Lily Hay Newman. She is a writer for Wired, and we're talking about this unemployment system scam, this fraud that has been happening. And one of the main perpetrators that she wrote about in her story that the Secret Service has issued an alert about is Scattered Canary, out of Nigeria. And so is knowing what we know about government systems and how they have a tendency to not necessarily be at the forefront of tech, right? There have been stories lately about how government systems have been failing because of their obsolescence. Is there any way to keep ahead of these people that are going to want to do bad things?
So I would say a good example of something that works pretty well is what the IRS has been doing to cut down on tax fraud, like I was describing, where someone basically gets your refund check before you can, things like that. What they've been doing is with people who are at high risk or who have dealt with problematic situations or identity theft or things like that, the IRS will send you a numeric code in the, you know, just in the mail. And so when you go to file your return, you need to have all your regular information, fill everything out, but also have that code. And it's just an extra layer of authentication that's mailed to your house or, you know, wherever you've indicated to the IRS. And that really helped to cut down on this type of thing because though it's not completely impossible that a scammer could also get that code, it makes their job a lot harder, right? It's not as easy to just, you know, digitally, remotely grab all the data, have everything, and just file these off one by one because they need to account for that PIN. So though, I was saying before that I think this is sort of this collective societal issue that we have in the U.S. with dealing with authentication, there are things that institutions and, you know, state governments and things like that can do, and there are steps they can take to make it much harder for this stuff to happen. And it would be great to see, you know, the states, including Washington State, you know, take those additional precautions, or if they offer them to a small group, offer it to everyone, things like that.
When you spoke with the folks at Guardian, that's the security company that did a lot of this research that's been tracking Scattered Canary, did they say whether or not, from a logistical standpoint, does this Nigerian-based cybercrime group, do they need people actually in the state to be compliant or to help? In other words, if they're doing direct deposit on these checks, I mean, the actual logistics, or can this all be done overseas without anyone ever setting foot in the country?
No, there's definitely the involvement of money mules in the U.S. and sort of this global network of mules to be able to bounce the money around. before it can, you know, come to rest with the scammers. And as I was talking about before, in terms of building this sort of toolbox of options to turn to for scamming, a really good example of that is things like romance scams, which are these scams where totally digitally the scammers build up trust with someone, develop a romantic relationship with them, so that person will just send them money. But the thing with romance scams is a lot of times the other reason scammers are investing so much time in that is that they'll get their victim of the romance scam to be a mule for other things. So when you think about some of these really time, right, these time-intensive scams, and you're like, well, how, you know, great, one person has whatever their life savings is, but that's it, you know. One of the reasons it's so beneficial to them to invest time in those types of scams is that those are some of the people who get turned into mules. Other businesses and individuals become mules without realizing it through other sort of, you know, less time-intensive manipulations, but that's a good example of how it can kind of build off itself.
When you saw the, I mean, you're obviously, you've done a lot of reporting on this particular area. And maybe the folks over at the security firm that you also called, maybe they would have expressed something about this. But I'm curious, when you saw that the government was going to put better than $1 trillion into rapidly released funds going to the U.S. public in a variety of ways, from small business loans to direct checks to people, were you prepared that this exactly was going to sweep in behind it, that the scammers were going to say, wow, they really want to move this money quickly, there may be a lower threshold? They referred to even the PPP loans, the Paycheck Protection loans, as the banks were calling them a low doc loan, meaning you didn't need a whole lot of documentation to qualify. I mean, were you or were the security companies expecting that when the government said we need to get a whole bunch of money to people quickly, that there was going to be a whole bunch of people in there trying to get their straws in that drink?
Yeah, I'll just speak for myself that I definitely was, and I believe that, you know, basically the whole research community was as well. But I will say that this is some of the most morally abhorrent types of scamming that I can imagine, though all scamming is, you know, totally unacceptable, totally illegal, totally preys on, you know, vulnerable individuals, and it's wrong. This on this scale during this time, I would say, is just really a low. And, you know, you would hope that people would have a little more restraint. But realistically, yeah, I was totally expecting it.
That is Lily Hay Newman. She is a writer for Wired. Thank you for the story, and thank you for talking to us here on Cairo Nights, Lily.
Thanks so much for having me.